Hello. Welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. Coach, our first True Hoop of the calendar year 2023. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, how was your break?
Break was good. Did some nice Christmas stuff with the fam. Not really a New Year's kind of guy. I did that, right, in my younger days. But now, crowds and... No, not into that. Not into any of that. Nice dinner, nice wine, just, you know, perhaps a scotch or a bourbon. But, you know, that's it. How about you?
Oh, I like doing all those things. I hear you on the crowds thing for sure. And we'll talk about COVID in a minute. Like, we have a pandemic raging in parts of this country. But my wife and I we went house shopping up in the Research Triangle area. And for the second time in 11 months, saw Florida State lose to Duke at Duke. But it's still pretty cool to see her son running on the court in Cameron Indoor. And if you like basketball, it's a great spot. If people hate Duke, I hate everybody. So I really don't have an opinion on anybody. I love how much they love basketball. I do. I love how much the kids there love the game. There's because it was during the holiday break, the students aren't on campus, so they allow alumni to come back and sit in the student section as if they were still students. So they don't sit down. Nice. There's 70-year-old men jumping up and down. They have the alumni band playing. It's super cool to see.
Oh, nice.
Men and women much older, that three times the age of the students, and they're super into it. Yeah, so as a basketball lifer, what's not to love about that, you know? It's a beautiful area. We saw a bunch of homes and neighborhoods that we like a lot. And I said to my wife, we were driving one day, and there's just a huge mural of Dean Smith near Chapel Hill. And I said, you know, it kind of makes some sense that I would spend some time in this state, in this area.
I mean, yes, for
yeah,
sure.
We saw Chapel Hill for a little bit. So, we had nice dinner and nothing fancy New Year's Eve with some really close friends we have. But I'm not against partying on New Year's Eve, but you're right on the crowd thing. We gotta be a little careful right now, I think.
Yeah, it's just, you know, for me, being fortunate as I am and as you are, we get to cover the sport. We go to NBA arenas a lot. So it's not that I'm like crowd phobic.
Right,
it's just that if I don't need to be in one, I'm not going to voluntarily choose to, right? And so on New Year's Eve, on a night where people tend to be a little bit more exuberant, shall we say, I'll pass
and
on that.
As we're going to talk about here with COVID, New York is one of the hot spots.
Well, there's also that. But glad you got to head down to the Research Triangle. Yeah. That's Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, for those of you that are unfamiliar with that area. A lot of cool stuff in that area. Obviously, we mentioned Duke, Carolina, NC State, right? And then
Wake Forest isn't far away.
Wake Forest is not too far away in Winston-Salem, right? So that's a hotbed of science and academic research, hotbed of high-level basketball talent as well. Just a lot goes on down there. So shouts to Coach for getting to spend some time down there. And as far as COVID goes, it's not just in New York. It's really nationwide, right? The what's happening is that we have adopted, and it's because this is what is presented out by the powers that be. All right, time to get back to normal, right? Everybody goes back to work. Everybody going back to doing what we got to do. Pandemic over. We have to move on with our lives. And there is a segment of, yes, we do need to move on with life and do the things that we need to do. But we also need to be mindful that, hey, man, this thing is still here, right? The current variant that's out, it isn't at the height of what Omicron was, but it is still at a very, very, it's still infecting people at a high rate. Hospital rates, hospitalizations are high here in New York City. You can see, you're not getting information from the CDC. No. So if anybody's interested in this stuff, I encourage you to follow Eric Topol on Twitter, who's the head of the Scripps Institute. Follow the World Health Organization. People that are still putting out information about, hey, look, we're not saying hide in your bubble or don't do anything. But, newsflash, like, this is still happening.
I have a lifelong friend, both her and her husband I've known forever. And my wife and I are lucky enough to be invited to her daughter's wedding in February. And they live not 30 minutes or so from us, and her daughter and son-in-law, future son-in-law, both PhD doctors working at MIT area. They met at MIT. Brilliant, brilliant scientists. And her daughter has an immunity issue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they were masking way before anyone else was masking because her fiance has a PhD in virology. So he knows, wear a damn mask. I don't want my fiance to get sick from whatever this freaking COVID thing. This is 3 years ago. And my friend is worried that this one, she has three kids, two sons and a daughter. And this is the first wedding. And she is very nervous that her daughter's going to be really sick or lots of friends and family can't come to this special occasion because this, you know, it's like if a bunch of your guys on your team have the flu, don't be in the locker room with them. Well, this is like the whole country is catching the flu again. The good news is for, I don't want anyone listening to this being worried. I have a lot of senior citizen friends. I mean, people in their 80s through my dad's sister is still alive. She's 87. They've all had COVID recently. They all made it. They're fully vaccinated, five shots in, but they all got COVID at a very similar time. They live near each other in Miami. This same variant, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So those that are unvaccinated, which is, we're going to get to that with a certain guard for the Brooklyn Nets.
Right.
That's the concern. Not that he would get sick so much as who is he going to pass it to? If you're unvaccinated, you're going to carry more viral load. And yeah, we have to be worried about this kind of stuff, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we still mask up out in public when we go outside and do anything. If we go to the store to pick something up, like 100%, like in our building, like in the elevator, we're always masked. Like any, just because, hey, it's, we know that the masks work, right? And being vaccinated as we all are with all the up-to-date boosters, look, you don't want to have this thing perpetuate. And not to mention, this is also flu season, cold and flu season. You got RSV out there. There's just all these additional things to attack your immune system.
A lot of illness. And we see it in the NBA too.
Well, as I was going to say, and in the NBA, if you guys have been paying attention, if you look at the injury reports, which, you know, as you know, here at True, our mission is to, you know, uncover truths. We're not saying anybody's lying about anything. All we're saying is, this is interesting. Like a lot of injury reports for teams, you're seeing a lot of guys out with, quote, non-COVID illnesses, right? Now, when they say non-COVID illness, you're to assume that it's a cold, a regular garden variety, flu, what have you. And it's just about every team has had at least one person with it so far in the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And it's just something to be mindful of and pay attention. And Coach, you talk about it all the time. We talk about it on the show. In this league with this marathon season, storms come, right?
Yeah.
That's just how it goes. Storms of your own making, which problematic, right? Like you can not have those. And the ones that you can control that are going to come regardless, right? And so this idea of, hey, there's a new variant out there. That's one of the ones you could potentially control. Everybody be vaccinated, do the right things, follow your protocols, do what you have to do so that you don't have this thing come and impact your team. Now, you mentioned a team in Brooklyn that we really haven't talked about because at the beginning of the year, you said, we're making a deal. We're not talking about this team unless they decide to be serious. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm with that. And we haven't. David, the Brooklyn Nets are the hottest team in the NBA right now. Winners of 11 straight, 15 of the last 16, I want to say 18 of the last 20. They have been playing excellent basketball. There's so many areas to cover with what they've been doing. I'm just going to give a couple quick things. Overall, they're fifth in adjusted net rating, fourth in adjusted offensive rating, 10th in defense. I mentioned 14-1 in the last 15. In that time frame, number two in net rating, number one in offense, number six in defense. Just as a sort of top 30,000 foot view before we dive deep, what are you seeing from Brooklyn over these last 15 to 20 games?
Yeah, so we talked about this on our call this morning. When we did our last show, if I remember right, and I said, who wins this proverbial championship? If you did it just right now, I said, I'd pick the Nets. There's no drama going on with them. They're shooting the lights out. I looked it up. Last 11 games, I think, they're at 43% leading the league. No big surprise. They have a lot of really good shooters. And they have the kind of playmakers that create great shots for others. I think they're playing harder on defense and they're more accountable when they need to. I don't think they're flying around everywhere all the time. I watched them play Charlotte this morning on Synergy. And I mean, Mason Plumlee had 22 points. He had some easy, easy baskets. Durant didn't really want to fuck with him too much, which I wouldn't either if I'm KD. I think he would have had they been down four with three to play, but they had a nice double-digit lead more or less, and so he didn't really care. And I don't think KD was wrong for that. Don't waste your energy. The Charlotte was never going to beat you. But when they need to defend, they were blitzing LaMelo some. They were pretty effective at that in terms of effort. And my guess is it's a coaching thing. Jacques has got them believing and competing, and he's holding them accountable, at least to some degree. Mm-hmm. And they've also gotten healthier.
You know, that's a big part of it.
TJ Warren really knows how to play. He's not shooting great from three. He's playing well, I think, on both ends. Mm-hmm. And Joe Harris is back. And so what a surprise. Guys that really know how to play are playing. Instead of nothing, David Duke isn't playing anymore. And those guys, Claxton's gotten much better.
Those reps
have really helped him.
Yeah.
And so, they've got one of the best players of all time right now. Right now, Kevin Durant's one of the best players of all time. Right. LeBron isn't. LeBron's an all-star. But KD is one of the best players of all time right now. And over the course of game and game out, you know, LeBron has moments here and there. And Kyrie is an all-star. So you put those good players around those guys and give a coach that's really working, holding guys accountable, and guys are competing. And I think now they're starting to believe. I think they're thinking, boy, if we just commit to this, that we got a chance to be a top four seed, and we're going to be hard to deal with in the playoffs because we have Durant. I mean, he really is cheat code that way.
Yep. That's a huge thing, Coach. You mentioned belief and accountability. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. Jacques did something, maybe 6 weeks ago now. He posted every guy's in practice one day their box out rate.
Every team tracks that, by the way. I mean, down to college, too. Mm-hmm. You're tracked on everything. Yeah.
And dudes were embarrassed at their numbers, like, not looking great. And he's like, look, we're not a kind of team that we've got one guy's going to gobble up 17 boards. Like, that's not how we got a gang rebound. We have to, and to your point about holding guys accountable, they bought into that, right? So guys are now, I got to get my number up. This is pathetic. And they talked about it all in the postgame. It's like, I hated my number. They wouldn't say what their number was. Like, I wasn't good, right? And as you always say, Coach, these guys are professionals. And they will take being publicly challenged by their coach and will take that to heart. I'm like, no, I got to be better than this because this is my pride. This is my profession. This is my craft. And guys have taken that accountability on as a squad. They're giving effort, requisite effort where needed. You mentioned Nick Claxton, his improvement this season, fantastic. He is playing like an all NBA defensive player. Like, he will make one of those three teams this year. He was a big reason why in that Bucks win a week and a half ago now, Giannis struggled from the field. He played him really well. He's active. He's a live wire. Coming out of Georgia, this is what Sean Marks thought about when they drafted him. And they're finding ways to play him and Simmons together, two non-shooters, and still have plus outcomes on the floor despite them being two non-shooters. And Claxton's ability to switch 1 through 5, humongous.
Yeah. You know, I on the flight home yesterday morning, I watched ESPN, the U part two. Mm-hmm. So this is the story of, you know, the Miami Hurricanes first were building with Jimmy Johnson. I was coaching high school.
In the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he recruited players of mine that played football that no one else was recruiting. And he was at Miami. And because they were super fast and really hungry. And so I knew Jimmy Johnson was brilliant, and I was right because the guy was unbelievable at Miami. And then they crashed after all the things happened. They lost all the scholarships. And so watching I was telling my son about the documentary. Ed Reed is a legendary figure, right?
Oh, Jeremy Shockey player,
an unbelievable. I don't know how it was in the NFL. I don't follow. I thought it was good. Unbelievable college tight end, one of the best of all time. Like, these dudes. They just willed that team. And so there was this and I don't know if you've seen this documentary.
I've seen both of them.
You have to watch it. It's two of the best they've ever done. That guy's Corbin, I think his name is amazing.
Billy Corbin, he's excellent. Right.
So there's a great scene where Ed Reed basically separated his shoulder and they were trying to fix it in a bowl game. And they show it on video. They have the video from that game where they're asking if he's hurt. And he's like, yeah, I'm hurt. And then he just hammers his teammates about, we got to fucking play harder. We didn't come here for this, whatever. Well, I thought about KD watching. That is not what KD does. Boy, mm-hmm. if he did, by the way, dudes might just become the Hulk. Like, imagine KD. Yeah, I'm hurt, dog. Let's fucking compete. Imagine what that would do when KD, Mr. Passive, the silent assassin, right. does that. But I think his level of play has forced these guys to just take it another level, because I can't let this man down. I don't want to be the reason why. And this is how players sometimes can think. I don't want to be the reason why he loses. So I got to go in early tonight. I got to not have that Coke, Coca-Cola, I mean. I've got to not skip voluntary shooting today, which happens all the time. I'm not missing anything because I can't let this guy down. So that's part of the belief is, and as I say to players all the time, if you only allow yourself to identify as a shooter, you have failed, because you're going to be lucky to make 4 of 10.
Right.
And so that means the other 6 times you're letting your team down because you think you're not contributing. And what a great feeling it is when your team wins, you set 3 great screens in the fourth quarter, or you took a charge, you did a great box out. Your man wasn't involved. You saw their big running to the rim for a tip dunk, and you boxed him out. That doesn't show up in the box score. Everyone's contributing that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it starts with Jacques, and no question in my opinion with Coach. And also, I said this to you guys this morning too. When I talk to people who connected to the league, they respect the Nets organization. Mm-hmm. Sean Marks and Andy Birdsong will run the team. These guys run a good program. Mm-hmm. And Kyrie is enigmatic to say the least. Mm-hmm. I give them, if you are going to survive Kyrie, you're going to have a stable franchise. And I think this is evidence. Even if they don't fall apart later, it can happen. But you would Charlotte would never even get anywhere with him. Right. A lot of other franchises. And he's doing his part. Gerard, people want to say Kyrie gets a bad rep and the vaccine. You look at if you're a Trumper, you don't trust the vaccine to begin with. But I'm sorry, COVID wasn't around when he was fucking up the Celtics.
Correct.
When he wanted to leave Cleveland, whatever.
Right.
Like, he brought this on himself. But it's nice to see a drama-free Kyrie, a drama-free Nets, and they're racking ass because of it.
Without question, you mentioned, with Sean Marks and Andy Birdsong, and the Nets are, without question, a stable franchise in that regard, despite all the craziness that was happening this summer, right? Remember, Josiah came out and said, all that aside, we're sticking with Sean and who I got here, right? The owner made that clear.
He must know there's some real competence there, Gerard, because it'd have been super easy to pivot.
Easy to just be like, all right, let me get rid of all these guys. So they're there, the team is winning, and they're playing hard. And look, let's not, talk about Claxton being better. Durant is playing like an MVP level player. Yeah. Like that when he's doing that, to your point, David, everybody else is like, well, I can't not play at my high level, or else this is, right? I'm going to be the obvious person here causing a problem.
Right. And Gerard, I just thought of this when you were saying that. You also can't complain about shit offensively. Right. That's Kevin Durant. Like, if you're not getting a shot and it's just some nice NBA starter getting them, you're going to complain. But not when it's KD or Kyrie.
Yep.
You just know you're not as good as them. It'd be like the number two pianist or a composer for a royal court when Mozart booked the gig. Mozart booked the gig, right?
Exactly.
Phil Mickelson, sorry, you grew up when Tiger was playing. Like, you're lucky to get a couple scraps.
This
is KD and Kyrie. Shut the fuck up, play defense, pass the ball, cut, move, race, play, compete. And then you get a chance to celebrate too.
Exactly. And they're seeing the buy-in from those guys defensively. KD's having his best defensive season metrics-wise of his career this year. It's just, you can just see it, right? They're bought in. And here's the other piece that I was looking at, Coach. Last year when they got swept by the Celtics in the first round, one of the things that Durant said was like, we're not very big on the wings. We're small.
Yeah.
Remember, Joe Harris was out all last year. So they often had to play a lot of lineups with Kyrie on the floor, with Patty Mills, who's also 6 foot, barely with sneakers on, and Bruce Brown, who maybe with shoes on is 6'3", 6'4".
Is okay? he that small?
That's three, wow. that's three small yeah. people, right, on the floor against these massive alpha predator wings. Now, I'm not, the people I'm going to mention right now, I'm not saying they are the greatest people in the world, all lockdown defenders, but they are considerably taller than the people who I just mentioned. Ben Simmons, Yuta Watanabe, TJ Warren, Royce O'Neal. Smallest guy in that group is O'Neal at 6'6". Warren 6'8". Yuta Watanabe is 6'8", 6'9". Ben Simmons is 6'10". Well, as Coach Thorpe has always told me, hardest thing to do in this league is consistently score over length. Much harder to score over that than it is 6'1", right? It's like shooting over a chair when you're a wing.
Hey, Gerard,
did that size helps them.
KD talk about this season? Not last playoffs.
And also this season.
Yeah, there was a time where he was just asked and he was just saying, we're just little. Like, we're little guys trying to box out big guys. Yeah, Nate McMillan and talked about this the other day because they try to guard their center on LeBron. And so they had nothing for the Lakers center, Thomas Bryant, because they were just little everywhere. DeAndre Hunter didn't play. Yeah.
You cannot coach size. You are what your height is. That's just it. And remember, all those guys I mentioned were out. Warren didn't start the season until November. He was coming back from injury.
Joe Harris was out. That. But now, he's 6'6".
Right. He's 6'6". Yeah. Now they're all getting regular rotation minutes. Yeah. That means they never have a position where it's Kyrie and another 6 foot guard on the floor ever. It's like, no, we've got no problem with that. And when you watch them switch, and if Kyrie gets caught on a big guy, the nearest big to him scrams him out of there immediately and sends him somewhere else. So they get
on
that big.
That's coaching and a connected group. Who I was, we were talking off air, Gerard, when you brought that up to me. That's just saying, hey, we're not going to even ask Kyrie to guard those guys. So that takes an awareness and a willingness to do it. And there's a timing involved. You can't do it at the wrong times. That's good coaching. That's why I say it's a coach's league as much as it's a player's league. We've seen that because they had KD and Kyrie to start the year and they sucked. And Steve Nash, it just didn't work. It doesn't mean Steve Nash can't coach. He just couldn't coach them anymore. Yeah.
No, it's this team is playing excellent basketball. So the fans in Brooklyn are happy, and they're home for San Antonio, I believe, tonight. Then they'll start a road trip. And I think this will be, another sort of sign and test. Like, okay, let's see how things are going. They've had some big wins. They've beaten the people they're supposed to beat in front of them. And as you said, with the parity in the league this year, you've got to get wins where you can get them, right? There may not be another time where you're going to be able to run off 11, 12 games in a row, right? So if you've got Charlotte, San Antonio, and some of Detroit coming up on your schedule, you better beat these people because every week is going to be something coming your way.
So you follow the league closely. If you had to pick a team from, let's pick two teams, one from each conference, that if you gave every player true serum that was in the playoffs, who do you not want to face in the finals? Who do you think those two teams would be?
I would say even still, despite their shitty record, with a healthy Steph Curry, I don't think anybody wants to see Golden State.
Golden State in the West.
I still think they would say Golden State. And in the East, look, it's a toss-up between Boston and Brooklyn. I'm going to say Brooklyn only because, damn, that Kevin Durant's a motherfucker.
I would have said the same two teams. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Golden State, because of what they can do offensively and what
they have history. We've seen it.
They've done so many times before. And if they make it to the finals, that means they figured some shit out. Right.
Correct.
Same thing here. You get Brooklyn to the NBA finals. That dude. Yeah. Kyrie's good. Won a championship. But at the end of the day, they're going to get a better fourth quarter look than us because they have Durant.
I was looking at his advanced metrics.
Yeah,
they're
ridiculous.
His shot, he is the best tough shot maker in the NBA. Like, they're like, okay, his quality of shot's really difficult, right? Like, in terms of contested twos, but don't matter. Like,
okay, I'm going to argue with that, but not for reasons you think.
They're
just not that tough.
Well, for him, yes. Right.
For they human are tough beings?
In the category of, difficult shot.
he's got that length and where he puts the ball when he shoots it. One thing no one ever thinks about this, but people like me that have to teach it for a living, the timing of your shot, the release of your shot is it's almost instinctive. I really, it's not easy to teach this, Gerard. Bernard King was a genius at when he could release his jumper, depending on where the defender was, and it didn't matter to him. He could do it at different times. Some players are like a metronome. As soon as they go into their shot release, you know exactly when it's going to go off to the millisecond. That's not the case with some of these other guys. And when you factor in his size and length, you can't contest him. Almost ever. Obviously, there's exceptions. Right. And so, yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think that, yeah, the way Brooklyn's playing, and if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals,
yeah,
it means they've beaten a Boston or a Philly, one or the other.
Right, or Milwaukee. Right,
or Milwaukee. Yeah. Yeah, they got one of those teams. They've solved some problems. Patty Mills is not playing well for them, actually. Nope. His metrics are bad. But that can change.
For sure.
Cam Thomas is in his second year. He's got time to develop. Claxton should only get better. Ben Simmons should only get better.
Well, I was just going to hit on that. If they make it to the conference finals or NBA finals, that means Ben Simmons has figured some things out too.
Yeah, probably. So, I think we got to pay attention. I won't lie. I don't root for anyone typically ever, but I'd love to see those guys ring off 25 straight for KD. KD's, to me, he's always been unhappy. Let me rephrase that. He's been unhappier than he should be as one of the greatest of all time. That isn't unique, by the way, to, I mean, Mozart wasn't happy.
Correct. Right?
Freud had his problems. Einstein had his issues. These are brilliant people. Durant's such a brilliant, talented player. And, you know, I want to add this too. We're in a really cool place right now where we've got some of the old timers. LeBron just had 47, right? Mm-hmm. Look what KD is doing. Harden's an all-star level player for Houston, not all NBA. Curry's still doing his thing.
Yep.
It's nice to see that. Meanwhile, here comes Luka. Here's Jokic. There's Giannis, who's not quite as good. Here's Tatum. Here comes some new guys coming. We'll get to them later. And the old guys aren't ready to give up the crown just yet. And so it makes for a parity-filled league. You've got everything.
It's awesome. You know, the top 10 in EPM is, you know, who you would think it is. But the three dudes that are the old-timers that are still in there and not just, like, hanging on, like, still in there and doing well. He's hurt now, but Curry, Durant, who you mentioned, and Damian Lillard, right? Like, still
Damian,
up there.
Right.
Like,
right.
Still absolutely. Doing big things, yeah. Right? These guys still matter in this league. So, all good. Super excited to watch what happens in Brooklyn the rest of the year. All right, Coach, you mentioned just now, you know, we got some youngsters in the league. And I kind of wanted to talk about potential first-time All-Stars. Now, here's the challenge with that. All-Star rosters are only 12 deep, right? So you got your five starters, seven reserves. There's also the element of All-Star game is, as Coach Thorpe will tell you, he doesn't care about it. All-Star game is for casual fans and for people who like TV shows and famous people. Because that's who gets voted, right? Every year, famous people. Even when maybe they shouldn't be on all-star teams anymore because they're not that good, right? But that's just the nature of how we do things here. So the most famous people in the NBA will be on all-star teams, right? So that's your LeBron, your Kevin Durant, your Steph Curry. But by the way, Steph, LeBron, and KD, all deserving, right? Okay, now, there's only going to be seven spots left for reserve guys, and there's going to be way more than seven guys in this conference who are deserving. But I kind of want to talk through some guys with you who I think, man, this guy's really good. I hope he makes a team. I don't know if it's going to happen. First up, from Indiana, Tyrese Haliburton. So this guy was drafted by the Sacramento Kings. We know how we feel about that organization. Not very good. Although playing better basketball now these days. So kudos to them. They trade him in the when it's a bonus deal. He goes over to Indiana with Rick Carlisle. He leads the league in assists. He is shooting 40% from three, not on like two threes a game, on seven a night. I mean, he is making shot that funky shot. Looks crazy. It don't matter. It's going in. He is playing awesome. And the Pacers, who look, we all said Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. They're three games above 500. They're a top six team. They're in the playoffs if it started today. And Tyrese Haliburton's got to get a lot of credit for that. You went away.
I'm back.
Oh, there we go.
I pressed my mute by my mistake. I would give him the most credit. I'm writing about him this week, so I'm not going to say too much now other than to say that he's just transformed his game into an elite scorer. He was always a great passer, a decision maker. He's really figured out a way to score at the rim, which he's not a great athlete, and from three, which you were talking about. And a lot of those, in fact, I would argue his shot selection isn't great. He's young. He's 22. Like, he can, at 25, if he gets a little bit smarter about his shot selection, he can even be scarier. But yeah, he's amazing. And so, right. So just your point about first time All-Star, do you take him or Harden? The TV show wants Harden.
The TV show wants Harden.
But I think the TV show wants Harden this year.
I he is.
Philly's a better team.
Tyrese, David Thorpe, top five in offensive EPM in the NBA.
Yeah, he's amazing.
So by numbers, it should be Halliburton, but the TV show is going to say James Harden. Right. So this is, again, these are the challenges we have to go through. All right, next guy up. It's funny we mentioned it because he's part of the deal. De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento. The Kings are playing well. He is playing. I mean, he is so fast with the ball in his hand. Like, oh my God, like this guy can attack. And Steve Kerr said this about him. If he's hitting threes, well, now you got problems because you could be like, all right, let me sag under. I'm not worried about that. But if I got to go up over the top of the screen now, he's going to dust me.
I didn't look this weekend. What's his 3% up to now?
I have not looked. Let me look at it now.
It's on the dunks. You can look at dunks and threes. That's
I'm going to pull up dunks and threes.
Because he was shooting his best ever.
He is shooting. It's dropped a little bit.
Yeah, he's not been shooting as well lately.
34%.
Yeah, he was up like 38 at one point. Yeah, he's not playing as well lately as he was, but he's still right there. Curry's going to make the All-Star game for sure.
Of course.
Damian's going to make the All-Star game for sure.
Well, there we
go. What about Chris Paul? Like, he missed a lot of time.
But he's a TV show. Right? He's a TV star that people know.
So, but you know what? The message I would give any of my players who, I've had players who weren't All-Stars and became All-Stars, win games. Like, if you just keep winning games, especially in the postseason, you'll get what you want. I think it's a stupid thing to shoot for, but I understand why they want it. It's one thing to compete with these guys. It's another thing to be on their team in an All-Star game. It's a hell of an honor.
And you get money incentivized to that. Contracts are tied to making All-Star teams, and you know, so I get it. And when your legacy is done, people start reading off your resume. That's one of the things they talk about. This person's a 10-time All-Star. Right. They talk about it. So I get why guys want to make it. All right. Everyone knows my favorite non-KD player.
Jaren Jackson Jr. I would say everyone knows. I know. I definitely knew.
Listen, he missed the first 16, 17 games of the season, something like that.
Good month plus.
Already in the top 6-7 in total blocks. All that time. If he had enough games, he'd be the league leader in blocks.
He's not qualified yet. He's not qualified yet.
Soon enough, he will be. Not only that, David, he's shooting his best from three. He is at his best EPM in his career right now. Number one on the team, actually, ahead of John Morant right now in estimated plus minus because of what he does on both ends of the floor. He made all defense last year. I'm just saying, Jaren Jackson Jr., that is a versatile wing. You know, if Anthony Davis ain't playing.
It is. All right, so we talked about this the last time we talked about him. When I wrote that he's the best prospect in that class over Luka, because I thought he could be Tim Duncan 2.0, which he is now. All I meant by that was elite defender, three-point shooter. That's all I meant. That's what Tim Duncan 2.0 was as a big. No one can score on the rim, not very much anyway, when he's in the game defensively, and he can space the floor offensively and make plays around the rim, whatever. By the way, to beat Tim Duncan 2.0 requires a lot. Like, he has a lot more wins he has to do, and I don't know that he's the leader. I know he's not the leader Duncan was, but he's young. I don't think Duncan was that. He had David Robinson for a while. Amazingly, I probably was wrong because Luka's just so incredible. We'll see. I mean, how many MVPs did Duncan win?
Two.
He did win two? Okay. I don't know that Jackson's – first of all, the game was different back then too.
Right. Game's very different.
Yeah. He's never going to be the scorer Embiid is.
Right.
And he's not going to be the overall defensive player Jokic is.
Right.
And we're not going to vote for a defense first guy to be MVP ever.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Defensive EPM, you know who lead the league in defensive EPM? Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yeah.
That Memphis Grizzlies defense, terrible before he was out.
Right.
He's back? Oh, all of a sudden they're top five in the league again. Not coincidence, folks.
How old is he?
23.
That's what I thought, 23.
Yeah. I mean, he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he He's got a shot. I don't know. Think about All-Stars at the big spot. Jokic is in.
So Jokic is in. Let's assume Davis is not playing.
Let's assume Davis is not playing. LeBron's a four.
LeBron's a four. Although they do what's it called? They do forwards. They do forwards. So he'll be with the forwards.
But Jackson will be a forward too?
Jackson will be a forward.
So yeah. Draymond's not going to make it.
Probably not.
He's got a shot.
Although he's famous. Draymond's famous though.
He is, but he's averaging 5 points a game. I mean it. I think he's at, look it up.
No, it is.
I think it's 5 points a game. Yeah. So I think Jackson's got a shot.
He's got a shot.
And if they're, what are they in the West?
They're right behind right,
two or three.
Denver, half game behind Denver.
So having him and John in the games together is not, you know, it seems like it's fair.
Well, let's stay in the West and talk about this guy because he's someone who might snag a forward spot. Plays out in Utah. We saw him play for Team Finland in Eurobasket. Lauri Markkanen. Look, you know my love language. Tall dudes who can shoot. That's Lauri Markkanen. He's playing.
I didn't think he was shooting so good, though. It might be up now. He can really play.
Shooting's gotten better.
He can really play.
Shooting's gotten better. Really
I has. Think Sabonis has a chance to be an all-star as well, a big over
now, that's
over mm-hmm. Jackson Jr. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lauri's shooting 43% from three.
Is he up to 43? Wow, he's killing it. Okay. Because he was not shooting well early. Their team isn't doing
68 true shooting, 63 effective field goal percentage.
That's incredible. Their team isn't doing as well.
No.
But yeah, so the list of guys that I'm writing about Tyrese and the horde of players making the jump. And I think we might call it something like the jump. We don't know yet. I have to write it first and then we'll title it. But he's on the list. Lauri is. Yeah, we saw it this summer. And he's maintained it, even with a different team. He's, you know, but I don't think Cleveland's apologizing because Donovan Mitchell's fucking killing it. There's an all-star guard for sure.
But here's the, how did you not be able to figure out how to make Lauri work where you were? You know, like that's the thing. And Chicago, I guess, failed on that too.
Yeah, yeah.
He was with the Bulls first.
Well, goes back to it's a coach's league. And you can be a good coach and still fail in some respects and not get guys to play well. But they wanted Donovan, and I wouldn't argue with them. I think having the dynamic guard pair with those two other bigs is better than the dynamic three.
Yeah, and he obviously, you know, Markkanen does not aid on defense the way that, you know, Mobley and Allen do, but Markkanen is not a terrible defender.
No, he's
actually
a big dude. But Donovan is just such an elite scorer.
He is.
Yeah, and a killer in the playoffs.
And Markkanen is only 25, so I have to imagine for Danny, he's part of their rebuild, I imagine. Like, he's going to keep – or you don't know.
So you asked – the question is that. What is he? To me, the answer is, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
Make us an offer, right? Okay. I think to your point, we can build around him. He ain't 28.
Right.
And on the other hand, if so – like, what if, I'm just playing a game here, what if OKC gave up some of their young guys in picks to add Lauri to Shea?
Yeah.
So there's your number one or number two in Shea, and there's your number three, if you look at it that way. Now I got to get myself, another wing or a five, and I got a team here. Like, that wouldn't surprise. They can make that happen.
Yeah.
Shea and he are about the same age, a year apart maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Utah's not going to trade him for just one pick. They'll want more. Right. And if you don't, all right, we'll stand pat with him. He's just 25.
And let's say they start tanking and they get Victor, and you try to pair Victor and Lauri together.
Gerard, we're going to have a hell of a month of June.
Yes.
Because we're going to have the NBA Finals, which very well could be as competitive as any we've had. We've had some really competitive ones. Last year was competitive. But we just so many even teams. So we could have that. But running in the background, like a computer program that never shuts off, who's getting Victor? Mm-hmm. It's going to be who and what are you trading? I mean, I don't think anyone's going to trade the pick for it. We'll know who's doing it. So now we're start speculating what else.
Right.
Yeah. What else are they going to do? The team that gets Victor wants to win in year one. I really think they'll do that.
So you know what's so interesting about that, right? We do the whole what Victor's potential ceiling is, right, versus what is here right now. Okay, let me ask you this question. Would a team, so basically what I'm asking is, the number one pick, which will be Victor, would you trade that for any of the established, young, clearly best players in the league right now? So you're talking Giannis, Luka, Jokic. Would you trade the one, so the Victor pick, for any of those three? I think some teams might, right? Because that's I know what Luka, Giannis, and Jokic are right now. I think I know what Victor might be, but I know what those three are.
I like how you're thinking, but my guess is if teams are going to think about the way they can make money on potential. You trade for one of those other guys and things don't work out in a year, well, you got to pivot potentially. You get Victor, you got yourself. You always can say, well, he's just a rookie, right? True. But it might be he scores 20 a game because he can shoot so well and be an impact Rudy Gobert with a jump shot, right, with a three. So I would think no one's gonna trade. So then the question is, well, then what are you doing? Because if you really want Victor to go global, because I think he's partly the way there now. I'm not an expert on that kind of stuff. I'm an expert on basketball, and he's really good at basketball. You want him to go global, you make some moves to give yourself a chance in the playoffs his first year.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah, seeing him in the postseason in year one, like LeBron didn't do that.
Huge. That'd be huge. That'd be like did Duncan make the playoffs in year one?
Because he had David Robinson. That team was good, and then David broke his leg or whatever, broke his arm. The team that gets Victor, I think it'd be thinking, well, let's see if we can't try to get him into round two, round three in year one. Doesn't mean I have no idea how good he's going to be in year one. I
like that.
Expect that he's going to be good.
Yeah, but we don't know. Let's round out the rest of our potential first-time All-Stars. This is a team that's starting to play better now, and he's a big reason why. Tyler Hero on the Miami Heat.
He had a game winner the other day. It was a cold shot. He's a very good offensive player.
Excellent.
Yeah. Player. I would take Tyrese over him, but we've got how long we have? A month before they make the decision?
Voting already started for like the starters.
The starters are voted, and then what happens? How do you get the reserves?
And then they'll have a pool of reserves, and then the coaches will select
the coaches of the team? Maybe?
I think it's the coaches in the league all vote.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that fills out the rest of the roster. Yeah. I mean, look, expand it to, I mean, if all NBA is 15, make All-Star 15. That way, you know, because there's always going to be a guy or two at the bubble. You're like, damn.
But they don't do that. They just do 12. It's 24 12. Total. Yeah.
Which, you know, it is what it is, man. You know, can't have this thing going on.
I will tell you right now, I won't be watching. I may be with you, just so you know. I'm not saying anything else. What I won't be doing is sitting in Clearwater, Florida watching that game. I can promise you that.
We might be doing some other things. Right. Okay. Right. Last person. We just talked about him. SGA. He is, I mean, my guys, after 30 a night, he's top 7, top 8 in EPM. I mean, he is. We talked about him all season long. We'd love to see him on a team that like actually is going to make the playoffs and be good. OKC is not there yet. That's not where they're heading towards.
But don't you think that he's so good now that he overwhelms the argument of the team sucks?
Oh, he does. Okay. Yes.
I don't know anything about All-Stars, but that's what I would.
Because the team doesn't actually
they're okay.
Suck.
They're okay.
Like they're okay. Right. They're okay.
They could beat any given night. I think he's an All-Star just because everyone has to recognize, wow. Yeah. This dude's something else. Yeah.
So Clippers, right? Again, this is the whole idea of like, I'm trading for something established, whatever. All right. So you get your Paul George because you want to get Kawhi. Well, that hasn't really worked out for you guys because Kawhi's been hurt and you haven't really advanced to where you want. You sure it was the right idea to give up Shea if you're the Clippers?
I just watched them play. They lost a great game to the Pacers, but they were healthy and still lost. And Kawhi and Paul George were great and they still lost. There's something, and Zubac is great and they still lost. Terrence Mann is an energy guy. Luke Kennard's a great shooter, and they still lost.
Yeah.
But Kawhi didn't have a great game. He had great, I think, a great half. No, he had a great third quarter. But I think he's starting to get it back. Paul George was good. He's starting to get it back. And, we'll see how that goes. But those guys are going to fight for All-Stars, too. Well, Paul George, I think, will make it.
Yeah, that goes back to the whole idea of famous people, right? Like, famous people will get voted, and that is the challenge. All right, folks, stay tuned. We'll be back after this short commercial break. Okay, David, I wanted to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. They've slid to third in the East, but, you know, still obviously playing outstanding basketball. Defensively, they're number 2 or 3 in the NBA, still playing outstanding defense. Brooke Lopez has been great. Giannis, the whole nine, we know the deal. should we be a little concerned about Chris Middleton and his injuries? And I ask because as much as Giannis is the fulcrum and he's that battering ram and Drew Holiday, and more I watch Drew Holiday, he has perfected that step back three now. Like he's gotten really good at it. But in the tightest moments, Chris Middleton is still, I think, their most important offensive player, because when things break down, he's a guy that can get you a shot in isolation and score. And he's just, you know, it was the wrist in the offseason. It's the knee now. Like, should you be concerned if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan about
that? They were my pick preseason to win it all. Concerned is the right word. They need Chris. Simple as that. They need Chris. So whatever you have to do to make sure he's healthy in the playoffs, you should do. And if you lose, and they've been bad recently. I think they're 4-6 their last 10. They're shooting
not good.
They're shooting it terribly. But they're like the old, you know, the adage of playing with their food kind of team. But I think it's by design to some degree. Giannis is still taking too many outside shots. They haven't figured that out still, amazingly enough, to teach him how to shoot. He just can't do it, but he's still trying. Can't get better shooting without trying to shoot. But he can change his – we've seen him transition into beast mode as just a scorer in the rim. So my guess is he still has that in his game when it matters.
Yeah. So we you mentioned that, you know, that they've been struggling of late, and they have offensively, they've been lackluster, right? I mean, like they're trying to pull up their offensive numbers right now. They're 23rd in offense, which is just ugly, right? Like that's very putrid for a team that good. And, you know, Giannis, if you look closely, coach, at Giannis's numbers, of course, everything raw is still amazing. 32, 12, and 6, basically, which is outstanding. But I was kind of digging deep a little bit, and you know, his efficiency has waned quite a bit. Like, this is his worst season efficiency-wise in 6 years. Like, he's only shooting 68% at the rim, which you're like, oh, 68% is great. I'm like, That's low for him. He's usually in the high 70s. Mid-range, he's terrible, 31%. But last year, he was 41%. And at three, he's shooting 25%. And the other telltale sign, free throws, down to 65% again after being up into the low 70s last year.
I don't know what it is.
I'm wondering, is it, to your point, playing with your food, like, let me just save some energy until late in the season comes, then I'll go back to battering ram, I'll hammer dunking everything and killing people at the rim because I can't do this all
this is going to be the test. We'll see, because that's the thought is that's probably what it is, a little bored. It's hard. You know, I referenced the Miami football team before. The one thing I will say, that I root for Florida teams. Mm-hmm. So even though I went to Florida, I rooted for when they play each other, it's a little different. But against everyone, I hate everyone else. Now I hate Florida too. But I didn't then. If Miami's in the SEC, they ain't winning 5 championships. Right. Because the challenges get up every single week. Even you play a bad team on the road, except for Vanderbilt, there's 90,000 people there. It's the only thing going on. It's easier to do that when you were in Miami back then. Not that those teams weren't great. They were. It's the hardest thing to get up. Giannis's fire is such a big part of who he is. It's just year after year after year when you can't shoot, you've got to bring that edge. And I just think he doesn't always have it. He's still amazing. Of course. Numbers are great, but he's not locked in as much as he has been.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I just, you know, so that's something that bears watching, but you can easily see this team kind of turn it on right later this month and rip off like 10 of 12, and you're like, oh, Bucks are fine, right? Like, that's kind of how we see that going. A team that we talked about at the beginning of the season, of course, as everyone did, because the trade for Rudy Gobert was just so massive, and it warped the whole trade market, is the Timberwolves. And yes, they got the cat injury, but they've just been funky, right? Like, all year, just something just doesn't look right over there. I don't know what it is. Is it coaching? Is it Anthony Edwards not taking another leap? Gobert's defensive numbers are down across the board. Like, he's still a good defender, but not DPOY level Rudy Gobert. It's just, you get weird comments coming out from certain guys. It's just the vibes don't seem great in Minnesota. And what do you think about what's going on in the Twin Cities?
Can you tell me what the comments were?
When Anthony Edwards, he either had a game winner or he's talking about some kind of food that he eats, and Kat's like, oh, you know, guys shouldn't be eating like burgers or whatever. Just like odd, like sniping, you know, and it's like, okay, like, are you mad at him? Like, is that what, but you're being passive aggressive? I don't know. It's just, and then the Rudy Gobert thing, you know, I know how to play with the big, Anthony Edwards says. I'm like, yeah, but you're not playing well with this big. Right. So what's that about? Right. Like,
I think I wrote an article about them to start the season. I wrote them when the trade happened. Like, I understood why Tim Connelly did it. I don't remember saying I thought it was the right move and he gave up a lot, but I understood why he did it. Like, there is an argument for we're going to be relevant, and without it, we really couldn't be relevant. As it turns out, it probably was a disastrous trade. Disastrous trade. But in the piece that I wrote, I included that this is really a referendum on Anthony Edwards. Like, if he makes the jump, then it all makes some sense. But if he doesn't make the jump and your best players are your two big guys and everyone else is just okay, that's a problem. It's very problematic. And it's just hard. It's why I voted for Luka and John Morant as most improved 2 years in a row, the last 2 years. They went from being great to elite. That's the hardest jump.
I was just gonna go. I'm so glad you mind meld. We think alike. That to you, that's the hardest jump, right? From I'm a good player to now being I'm an elite great player.
I would make it I'm a borderline all-star to elite all-NBA level player. I think that's the hardest jump. That's just the fewest amount of them. I don't think it's a hard jump to go from not playing in a rotation to playing in the rotation. That might just be who's in front of you. Coach doesn't like you. Coach likes someone else for more. And I just got to not throw the ball to the bad guys. I got to box out. I got to race the court, make some shots here and there, not turn the ball over. You know, I should be okay. I just don't think that's nearly as hard as what Ja and Luka did to go from where they were to where they were the following year. That, to me, is the hardest thing. Yeah.
And so the bet, as we said at the time, was that Edwards is going to make that leap. He's still young. He's got time. But so far, we haven't seen that leap this first half of the year.
Right. So, yeah. So Bears watching. I think, to your point, I think it's more than just any one problem. There's a coaching issue. There's a chemistry issue.
It's weird and funky.
It's messy, yeah.
And the thing is, they made the playoffs last year. So in many ways, I'm like, why did you think you need to tinker with that and screw around? Like, we're good.
You know, what have I said before? When we have success as humans, we tend to get casual. Mm-hmm. But we also tend to get arrogant. So Tim Connelly had some success in Denver, got paid $1 billion, whatever he got paid to go to Minnesota. And I think he might've felt like, oh, this is a genius move. You'll see. All right. We will see.
All right. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I'm not judging him after 1 year.
Right.
Yeah.
So far it's not working so well. Mr.
I know Bradley. Utah's not complaining. I don't agree with Utah. I hate Utah for this. I want Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert together.
Yeah. I mean,
so good.
That couldn't work. I don't know. Speaking of outstanding play, we mentioned making that leap. Luka Doncic has been on a tear, Coach. Yeah. 60-point triple doubles, 50-point. I mean, right, he's just
50. Yeah.
The 62-point triple double a week ago, and he had 50 last night. 50 plus last night. I mean, he's out of control right now scoring the basketball. He's number one in EPM by a tenth of a point, over Nikola Jokic, which, by the way, man, that MVP race, woo, Luka's not going to have enough wins, I don't think, for it to matter, is what it's going to come down to. And this is why we're talking about it. What are we to make of this, like, scoring barrage and output? It's great for him, but is this great for the Dallas Mavericks? I say no.
I mean, it's not a great solution in the postseason. Because to do that when teams can really lock in on you every game is another step. I don't think it's the best thing for them. Yeah.
And I feel like they're a team that has to be looking at the trade deadline, right? And be like, we got to maybe do something here.
Yeah.
What that something is, I have no idea.
Yeah, they need more help scoring in the paint. Christian Wood's on his own with that. Powell doesn't short score there. And Kleber is just more of a shooter.
You know, the creator, in secondary creator,
getting more scoring help as a big or a guard would be helpful.
I mean, I think you're kind of seeing the missing Jalen Brunson piece here, right? I think you're, because that's what he was, especially with that second unit. It's like, all right, Jalen, you run the show, and you could even, when they share the court, you can move Luka off ball a little bit, right? Like, have Jalen initiate some of the offense. This is it bears watching. Right. I, you know, look, what Luke is doing is phenomenal. I did see this metric though. His 3-point shot quality, however, atrocious. Yeah. Like the worst in the league by far.
All the time.
By far. And it's not even close. Like, it's like, oh. Yeah. I mean, you watch the game, I saw your eyes tell you that. You're like, oh.
Yeah. He stands out above everybody. Yeah.
But, you know, listen, great player still finds ways to make things work, and he's still doing the thing. So, you know, is what it is. Let's wrap here. They had a great matchup last night. The two best teams in each conference, record-wise anyway, Nuggets and the Celtics. Nuggets look good in that game. Nikola Jokic. I mean, what are we going to say about this dude? I mean, still the best player in the world, right, according to Coach Thorpe. I mean, it's just he is what he does, not just scoring whatever, how he impacts
his skill,
the entire
his passing,
team.
His scoring.
Everything.
Seeing the game.
Directing guys. Yes, passing guys open. But my favorite thing about Jokic, Coach, is when I watch him, he'll point to a spot he wants a player to go to, a teammate. And if they don't go to it right away, it's like, especially a young guy, like, or a guy who doesn't play with them long, like Bruce Brown or something. He's like, what? No, go there. And the guy's like, but I don't, why there? That's not where the thing is. You go there, oh shit, you pass somebody else. Why don't, like, he just fucking knows, bro. Wherever he tells you to go, just go there, okay?
He's
like,
playing chess.
He sees something. He's playing 3D chess. Yeah. He sees something you don't see. Just go there. You'll get the ball back where you want it, and you'll score. Promise. Yeah,
he's amazing. And, you know, people I know, like, I'm part of group chats on Facebook with all coaches, and they're all bent out of shape that the world's best players are international. You know,
that's awesome. That's great for us. I
agree. I said the same thing. He was born in Serbia, but if Serbia had a monopoly on player development, we'd have more Jokic's.
Right. But we
he's
don't.
One of one.
Right.
He is extraordinary. Yeah.
So
I love watching him.
So good.
I love watching him.
So he was awesome last night, 32, 12, and 12, something of that nature. They won. Pretty convincing win for them, by the way, against a good Celtics team. But there was an issue in the game. Robert Williams III, who's back for the Celtics, bent the rim on a dunk, and the game had to stop because the
rim
wasn't
level. They
didn't notice
it right away either.
They did not. And Robert said, I didn't even notice. So my team said, you broke the rim, man. Oh, sorry, my bad. Okay. So you would think in the NBA in 2023, modern times, oh, we got 75 rims in the garage. Let's go down and get one, bring it out, do the whole thing. Take us 5 minutes. No. 35 minutes delay, and we got guys coming out. Is it level? Is it not? The players are all standing around going, what are we doing? Jokic is like jogging on this. I got to stay warm,
after
man.
The game,
this is crazy.
They said it wasn't level. It wasn't fit.
And Jalen Brown said, I don't think it was still level after all that. But that's a larger point to preparedness that you wanted to talk about as a coach and as someone who cares about the sport as a whole, right, and how we need to approach things.
Yeah, just very quickly on that, the our athletes are as dedicated as any athletes ever. Remember, in the 50s, they were smoking cigarettes and whatever. It worked for them. These guys
drinking
are,
beer at halftime. Whatever.
Right. These guys are locked in all the time. We need to have employees for these teams to be the same. It seems weird to me that you didn't know it took you that long to get the rim up. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they were as efficient as possible. It was still 35 minutes, but it's not a good product. You know, I'm worried that every young person who went to that game never wants to go back again.
I was just going to say to you, you had a matchup against potentially the two
top seeds
or two of the MVP frontrunners, right? And Tatum.
Right. You have the two top seeds.
Nikola Jokic.
And probably the top two MVP go-getters right now.
And if you're a 13-year-old, I mean, I don't know many 13-year-old kids, but I'm going to guess if any 13-year-old kid was watching that game at home, the minute that happened, they got up and left and didn't come back to the game.
Yeah. I would argue you're right.
And this is, right, this is a television product, right? We've got to keep eyeballs locked in on what we love and what we're doing here. And we, you know, this is something that needs to be better, right? Again, it's 2023. How is the process for when the rim breaks? Because no one didn't just thought of this yesterday. It's going to happen, right? Here's our process. Here's how we do it, right? It's every building you know has an evacuation plan. This is what you do. There's contingencies.
Plan B when the rim gets broken.
Always. <Yeah. laughs> How does this not happen sooner? Anyway, that's just something that's worth paying attention to. All right, folks. That was our first episode of 2023. Happy to be back. We'll be back on Thursday talking more stuff. Should be good games this week for everybody to tune into. I'm sure something will happen that'll be super exciting. Oh my God, you see that? We'll talk about it on Thursday. Until next time, everybody, take care.